This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Welcome to the Investor Download, the podcast about the themes driving markets and the economy now and in the future. I'm your host, David Brett.
Climate disasters are nothing new, but it's the frequency of them that's ratcheting up.
There has been no shortage of dramatic weather events around the globe this year.
The remnants of Hurricane Ida are continuing to wreak havoc across the northeastern United States.
Folks, this is historic for us. New York has been taking weather records for 90 years, and never in a 24-hour period have we had that much rain.
We could see strong storms. Tornadoes are possible out of this system.
Let's start with these wildfires in Greece.
Evacuated from his home, Mr. Panayiotis watches his burning village on the news. And in his lifetime, he's seen 97 summers. This is his hottest.
More than 150 million Americans are under heat alerts as temperatures reach triple digits across the U.S.
Flash floods have ravaged Germany. At least 58 people have been reported dead, and dozens more are missing at this moment.
Just because of sea level rise, what used to be a 100-year event right now will become an annual event. And this happens, unfortunately, at many locations around the world, even with warming that is limited to 1.5 degrees.
The problem's global, and so too is the solution. To transition away from carbon-heavy economies to prevent a climate catastrophe. Promises have been made.
Droughts, heat waves, and pandemics. As the fallout from climate change intensifies, so are the efforts to curb it. The European Union agreed to cut greenhouse gas emissions by at least 55% by 2030 as compared to...
And promises have been broken.
Channeling climate finance to poor countries is one of the main metrics for success in Glasgow. And rich countries previously pledged to provide $100 billion for developing countries for green transition. But this goal has not been met yet.
However, there has been progress. More than 70% of greenhouse gas emissions are covered by net zero pledges, from just below 20% in 2019, with an increase in number enshrined in law. But more's needed. Estimated annual capital investment requirements for net zero is expected to top $5 trillion by 2030. A transformation of the entire global economy is required, with a significant step up in innovation efforts. The EU has emerged as a global leader on climate action, with a strong track record and ambitious targets. First came the Green Deal.
In Europe, we set ambitious targets with the European Green Deal. It is an opportunity to change our economies.
To create green jobs.
To grow sustainably. But if we want to succeed, we must all work together.
The European path to net zero will require big emissions reductions. It will also require huge additional investment. To help, we now have Fit for 55.
We will put a price on pollution. We will clean the energy we use. We will have smarter cars, better trains, cleaner airplanes. We will grow our economy in a way that does not take more from our planet than it gives. And this is our promise, especially to our children and future generations.
And a potential game changer for companies, sectors, and countries trading within the EU. Legislative levers are being pulled to tighten up the carbon market, regulation, and subsidies, all of which will put pressure, huge pressure, on businesses to transform and transition to a cleaner economy. We'll get to the impacts it will have on companies and sectors later in the show. But let's rewind slightly. Let's start with a reminder of how we got to where we are, starting with Europe's Green Deal. Here's Holly Turner, a sustainable analyst at Schroders.
So the EU Green Deal was announced in 2020, and it aimed to transform that 27-country block of the EU to a low carbon economy. So it works through a framework of regulation and legislation and sets an overall target of being net zero carbon emissions by 2050 and has a target of about a 50 to 55% cut in emissions by 2030 compared to 1990 levels. It's expected that at least 1 trillion euros is needed to be found over the next decade, according to the European Commission, to help or enable this EU Green Deal to take place. The biggest share is expected to come through from the EU budget and then further monetary commitments from national governments, and then around 279 billion euros from the private sector. An interesting component that came from the EU Green Deal is the promise of a 100 billion euros just transition. And this is something we've seen as a rising subject at the likes of the recent COP26. And it's a mechanism to help ensure that as we move through this transition, that social aspect of climate change remains in place. So the mechanism is to help retain workers who lose their jobs, for example, that currently work in coal mines, and other areas that we expect to be squeezed during a transition.
So where does Fit for 55 fit into this? And start with, what is Fit for 55?
Sure. So Fit for 55 was announced in 2021. And I guess it's becoming even more ambitious with some of the aspects that came through on the EU Green Deal. So the EU plans to meet that 55% emissions reduction target by 2030 versus the 1990 levels. And it's really trying to put parts of that target in place. So we saw more granularity around certain sectors that we wanted to decarbonize, the types of targets that might come through in, say, EV penetration or renovation of buildings. And a big part of the Fit for 55 package was around the carbon policy aspect. So we saw expansion or changes to the emissions trading scheme. We saw an introduction of what would be the CBAM, or a carbon border tax mechanism adjustment change as well. And that all came through in that sort of granular report of the Fit for 55.
So that's the helicopter view of the Fit for 55 and some of the components in part two of the show. Before we get on to how that might affect specific companies and sectors in part two, we're going to just have a little bit more of a deep dive in and around Fit for 55 and some of the components that have either been changed, strengthened or introduced.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
So, Holly, let's just have a little bit more of a deeper dive at some of the things you mentioned in the first part of the show. So, as far as I understand, the EU has expanded the emissions trading system. So can you just give us a little bit more of an overview of what that means?
So the EU ETS was the first large emissions trading scheme in the world, and it was launched in 2005 and really became the cornerstone of the EU's climate policy. So an emissions trading scheme is termed a cap and trade system. A government will issue a limited number of annual permits that allow companies to emit a certain amount of carbon dioxide. The total amount permitted becomes the cap on emissions, and companies are taxed if they then produce a higher level of emissions than their permits allow. Companies that reduce their emissions lower than the cap can sell or trade unused permits to other companies. So the Fit for 55 saw three key expansions to the current emissions trading scheme. So the first is the expansion of the ETS to include the maritime sector. So the phase-in period will commence from 2023, and you'll be expected to surrender allowances corresponding to about 20% of verified emissions by 2023. Gradually, this will reach 100% of your allowances by 2026. It will cover voyages within the EU, but also 50% of emissions journeys between member countries and countries outside the EU. The second is that the free allowances for the aviation sector will gradually be removed, and it will move to a full auctioning system by 2027. And the last one is that the Commission is proposing to include the building sector and the road transport sectors in an adjacent trading scheme from 2025. So this will operate separately from the current emissions trading scheme that we have in place. But the Commission has mentioned the merging of these two systems in future years.
Okay, you also mentioned the Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism, or CBAM, as it's also known. Potentially in future shows, we're going to do a proper deep dive on carbon trading and carbon taxes, because I don't completely understand it. But can you just give us a brief overview on what the Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism is and how it might affect companies?
So the Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism proposes a levy on imports of specific products. So the system will be quite complex, but what it does is bring the EU's price on carbon into the products that it imports and creates almost a level playing field for EU producers in specific sectors. Its main purpose is to prevent a carbon leakage from, you know, encouraging or decarbonising European players, whilst also then importing other goods from countries with higher emissions. It'll initially cover quite a wide-ranging amount of sectors. So it'll cover aluminium, cement, electrical energy, fertilisers, iron and steel. And it's currently laid out in two time periods. So from 2023 to 2025, there'll be a gradual phasing out of free allowances. So importers into the CBAM sectors that I've just highlighted will have to report emissions embedded in their goods that are coming into the EU, but they won't incur any costs. From 2026 to 2035, EU producers' free allowances will gradually phase out at a rate of 10% per annum as that CBAM mechanism is gradually phased in. At the moment, the proposal only states direct or scope one emissions being included, and then there'll be a potential revision for scope two emissions from 2026 onwards. So scope one emissions are direct greenhouse gas emissions that occur from sources controlled or owned by an organisation. So this would be, you know, emissions associated with fuel combustion in vehicles or boilers. Scope two emissions are indirect greenhouse gas emissions, but still central to the sort of operation of a company, and they're associated with the purchase of electricity, steam, heat or cooling, and the emissions associated with each of those.
So what does that mean for the continent and the people that live within Europe?
So I think the Fit for 55, there are a couple of areas I guess we could pick up on where we see it affecting people, and we've discussed that overall link to a just transition earlier on in the podcast. But I guess in terms of specific sectors that we could pull out, green mobility is one. So we've seen a real focus of that within the Fit for 55 package. EV penetration expected to increase with further tightening of the EU CO2 fleet average, a de facto ban on new diesel and petrol cars from 2035, and various targets that we see around EVs in terms of recharging points, 1 million by 2025, 3.5 million by 2030. So we can see this directly would impact people and consumers that use sort of green mobility or automobiles in general. The other area I'd like to pick up on is the Fit for 55 seemed to have much more of a focus than we've seen from previous packages around renovation and buildings. So they account for around 12% of total emissions. And the real focus seems to be largely on the renovation of public buildings, the increase of the energy efficiency target to 2030 than we've seen from previous packages like the EU Green Deal. And I think this is expected to then reach that consumer level in terms of incentives to improve the efficiency of our own homes. You know, will we see incentives to purchase certain types of light bulbs, for example, or have better insulation? And so how that overarching view of or tightening of renovation and buildings emissions could really then trickle down into the people and the homes that we live in.
So we've dealt with how it might affect the continent of Europe and the people who live within it. How might it affect companies and countries outside of the EU trading with companies within the EU?
Sure. So obviously it's going to put a real spotlight on countries that we receive imported goods from in terms of the emissions of associated with products that we import. And we do see quite a pace within that withdrawal of free allowances. I mentioned that from 2023 to 25, importers in the CBAM sectors will have to report emissions embedded in their goods. And so where a company or can't calculate its emissions, then there would be a default value associated or placed on that. And it originates from the country of origin's carbon intensity average. So I think we'll see, you know, it might incentivize other countries to be really aware of the emissions associated with products as they're sort of forced to report these to the EU if they want to continue to exchange goods or trade with. So I mentioned earlier that at the moment, only scope one emissions are being included in the CBAM, and there's the potential for that scope two emissions from 2026 onwards. I think with the exclusion of the scope two emissions at the moment, there's likely to result in some carbon leakage within industries where scope two is a real source of emissions. And importers could reroute specific goods to Europe, which are maybe on the lower emitting in terms of their range of product offering, and they would simply reroute those higher emitting products elsewhere.
Okay, sounds like a minefield, but Fit for 55 was announced probably a couple of months just before COP26. So did it have any effect on the agreements made a couple of weeks ago at the meeting?
So I think having this package proposed already within the EU and most components being largely agreed upon between EU countries probably enabled the EU to have much more of a sort of vocal and committal voice at COP. And we definitely saw them coming through in terms of being very clear in aspects or sectors that they thought needed to decarbonize and the commitments that the EU were happy to make. And we've spoken about the carbon border tax adjustment mechanism throughout this podcast, and we saw hints of a first agreement in that. So during COP26, the US and the EU agreed a tariff deal on steel and aluminium. And I think this could indicate really, you know, paving the way for global agreements to permanently restrict or look at restricting the access to products that don't meet carbon intensity levels.
Okay, so we've been through the Fit for 55 proposals, and in the final part of the show, we're going to go through its potential impact on sectors and companies with Nicolette McDonald-Brown, a fund manager at Schroders.
Get in touch with us by email at schroderspodcasts@schroders.com or visit our website, schroders.com/investor download.
So, Nicolette, we've had Holly that's gone through the minute details of Fit for 55. Could you just break down some of the most important proposals that we've got in the Fit for 55 and how that might affect the sectors and what we're investing within those sectors?
Sure. Thank you very much. So it would be hard to talk about Fit for 55 without talking about renewable energy. And clearly, one of the things we've seen is a big increase in the target to 40% for a renewable energy share. So you can imagine that your investors would typically be looking at wind turbines, you know, the OEMs who are right at the forefront of this sort of renewable energy drive.
OEM stands for Original Equipment Manufacturers. Back to Nicolette.
And I think what we would remind people is that sometimes the real alpha and the real return is slightly hidden. And so when we think about these OEMs and how some of them are going to be squeezed between the price deflation that's going to drive the adoption of renewable technology and the raw material inflation we've all been reading about, we think some of their suppliers are actually in a good spot. So you think about the people who do the dull stuff. You think about the people who make the ball bearings that make the turbines spin, or those chemical companies that provide the chemicals to allow solar panels to work. We think often the greatest alpha that is sort of provided by these trends can be just that little bit hidden behind the obvious.
And is part of that reason potentially because some of those more well-known companies within the renewable energy area, the valuations might have already been taken advantage of prior to a lot of this movement towards a more cleaner economy?
Yes, I think that's a fair statement. And you can definitely sometimes see what we would think of as crowding towards these kind of more obvious sectors, and particularly when there are a limited number of names or a small amount of market cap. So while clearly opportunities will emerge, sometimes it's worth looking beyond the headlines to the detail.
Okay, and we also heard that obviously buildings, certainly in previous podcasts, they're quite strong emitters of some of these toxic gases that are coming out and harming the environment. Is there anything in particular within buildings that you can recommend to us?
Yeah, so I think buildings is a really interesting one. So, you know, talking to some of my colleagues around the floor, you know, obviously the first thing that people often talk about is, you know, companies like Sika, who help lower the sort of water footprint of concrete, which is obviously such a big building material. But you could also think about some of the IT services companies, more anomalous. So think about companies like Capgemini, where, you know, right from the design and, you know, architecture element of buildings, they're able to integrate sustainability into that process. So again, I think it's really interesting that when we're looking for opportunities to capture the value created by this sort of shift to a more sustainable economy, it's going to touch everything from the practical, the kit that we use, but also how those buildings are designed in the first place.
Okay, and the European Commission's proposals for road transport include a 55% cut to CO2 emissions. So is there anything around cleaner cars?
Yeah, so as a European investor, I think one of the amazing things is if we think about EVs, you know, the last sort of couple of years have been dominated by conversations around Tesla and really this idea that only Tesla is driving the transition to EV. But if we look closer to home here in Europe, you know, we increasingly see ID3s, e-trons. You know, you can clearly see that Volkswagen is really starting to put its footprint to work. And they will really challenge Tesla from a number of vehicles produced. So I think here in Europe, we are really beginning to see, you know, not only the manufacturer, but the widespread adoption of EV vehicles.
Now, it's not just wind turbines that will hopefully help create clean energies. And this is specifically to do with cars. There's lots of talk of hydrogen and some of those longer lasting batteries. So is there anything around the future fuel space that might be interesting?
Yeah, I mean, for us, an area where we've really been focused on the fuel side has actually been airlines, really thinking this stage beyond what we're currently looking at. So it's not just about cars, but it's also about commercial aircraft, because if we think about electrification, and we just think about the sheer logistics of it, you know, we can see the practicality of an electric vehicle, but it's kind of tougher to get your head around a sort of commercial jet that is electric. So there, what we think we're really going to see is sort of an increase in the amount of sustainable aviation fuel that's going to be encouraged by regulation to be blended into traditional fuel. So for us, companies like Neste that not only produce biodiesel, but also produce sustainable aviation fuel, will help drive this kind of decarbonisation of transport, not only on cars and on roads, but in the skies as well.
And Holly mentioned these extra carbon taxes. Is that surely going to target the airline industry quite heavily given the amount of fuel they burn?
Yeah, I mean, carbon taxes, as ever, are a complicated spot. And I think, you know, as we've discussed as a firm, you know, one of the complexities with Fit for 55 full stop is how we think about some of the unintended consequences of a higher carbon price full stop. You know, whether we're seeing it here in the UK when we think about rising fuel prices and the cost of heating homes and things like that. And so I think whether it's a tax or just generally raising the price of carbon, I think the government and investors and bluntly society are still trying to navigate their way through the unintended consequences.
Potentially an end to cheap air travel in Europe then.
Yes, but I think as we all have noticed, you know, one thing that's interesting is you can, when you buy your ticket, increasingly opt to offset or contribute in some way. And so I think it's possible that there'll be some opt-in, you know, i.e. people will be able to choose. And perhaps, you know, as we've seen with firms like our own, you know, firms will move to very explicitly think about the carbon footprint of business travel. And so maybe we'll be able to shield the consumer to some extent, because those who want to pay will pay a premium, and those who don't to some extent will be subsidised.
OK, and if we're trying to get away from some of those sectors that really do burn through carbon intensive fuels, the old more traditional routes of transport such as rail?
Yeah, I mean, I think rail is a really interesting space. And I think certainly if we had spoken a couple of years ago, we had really high hopes, not only for rail as a path to decarbonisation, but also for the shares. And while the path to decarbonisation is still incredibly important and stands true, one thing that has happened is that the rail space, whether you are talking about, you know, the trains and engines manufacturers, you know, with the likes of Alstom, or you're talking about brakes and equipment like that with companies like Knorr-Bremse, what you've seen is that those are businesses that have been really negatively impacted by the COVID crisis. Really bluntly, as we've all worked from home, few of us have been commuting. And so there's been less wear and tear on the lines, but also less spend and less new kit. So as ever, it's interesting to see sort of long-term trends collide with sort of near-term financial difficulties. So while we think rail remains very attractive and clearly part of the solution, near term, we're still trying to navigate the impact of COVID on the industry.
The Fit for 55 proposals also state that by 2035, the EU should aim to reach climate neutrality in land use, forestry and agricultural sectors. So around the agricultural sector, I mean, how much of an impact is this going to have?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting space to look at. And I think what's clear is that it's touched by so many different trends, because we could talk about agriculture from a carbon perspective. We could also talk about it from a diversity, a biodiversity perspective. And so I think it's a really challenging space at the moment in terms of it's a low margin space, right? When you think about the end user. And so I think it's a challenge about how as an industry, they're going to navigate through what are an increasingly complicated set of demands. That said, when we think about the providers into that industry, so whether we are thinking about seeds, fertilizers, equipment, etc., there is clearly increasing demand for products that help, you know, farmers and very large commercial land users navigate this complexity. So as ever, a bit of balance, but measured by the fact that this is not the highest margin end business.
Yeah, like you mentioned there, this seems like there'll be a lot of influence brought on from the industry to the consumer, right? Because if the consumer's not willing to shift, but the proposals from Fit for 55 force the producers to move in a certain direction, then there's a bit of give before the consumer takes. Would that be fair?
Yeah. And I think, you know, as ever, the wonderful thing about, you know, investing across the whole market is that you're quite right. You know, in some sectors, you know, there's a clear alignment of incentives. So we can see products that help companies achieve carbon targets, also help them increase their margins, also help them drive higher end prices to their products. So it's a very virtuous circle. And in other places, it's harder to link the product to the financial success of a company, and therefore harder to think about how people are going to pay more. Or as you say, even as a consumer yourself, you know, working out how much of a premium you're prepared to pay for a product that has a lower ecological footprint. So I think, as ever, with complicated themes, we're going to have the odd misstep along the way and people will get pricing and products wrong. But ultimately, out of a crisis that has been very difficult, you know, we combine, you know, the societal impact of COVID with kind of Fit for 55. And I think what we're really seeing is recognition from governments to end consumers that all stakeholders matter, both sort of environmental, but also, you know, consumers, regulators, governments, etc., all have a role to play in getting this right.
Here's what else investors are talking about. Homer Simpson once famously said,
"To alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems."
To paraphrase Springfield's most famous resident, we could say a similar thing about big cities and climate change. More than half the world's population lives in cities, with global cities consuming more than two-thirds of the world's energy. Cities are also responsible for more than 70% of global CO2 emissions. But, according to Tom Walker, Schroeder's co-head of Global Real Estate Securities, a number of global cities are coming up with pioneering initiatives to tackle the problem of climate change. To read Tom's article, "Could Global Cities Be the Cause of and Solution to Climate Change?" visit schroeders.com/insights, where you can read, watch and listen to much, much more. Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to find out more, check out our website, schroeders.com/the investor download. You can also get in contact with us about anything in the show or ideas for future shows at schroederspodcast@schroeders.com. Please remember to subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review. We're now doing one show a week, which will be available every Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. Thanks very much for listening, but above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.